All right, well, we are in it today. We are going through a series called Choose Life. And if you've been with us over the last few weeks, and by few weeks, I mean the last 2 months, we've been walking through the Ten Commandments, and we've been itemizing each one each Sunday and calling it Choose Life, because simply, it is a choice, right? And what we said from the beginning is that God didn't create the Ten Commandments so that he could limit your life. He didn't create the Ten Commandments to be rules and barriers so that you simply can't enjoy life. He gave us these boundaries that if you and I would just live within the context of the boundaries that he's created for you and I, we get to live life and live it abundantly. And that's what's so great about it. And if you've been with us, you've walked through the first seven, and today we're probably, and I would say arguably, the most important of the ten. And you're probably thinking, well, wait a minute, isn't that number one? Well, what did Jesus say? And we'll get there in a second, okay? But first, I want to start with a story, because every great sermon starts with a fun story. And this one's not so fun, but it may be for you. It was back in the day. I could say that now, because it seems like forever since I've been in Bible college. So way back in the day, when we used to ride horses to school in the snow. Speaking of which, we're probably going to need to put some poles out there for you guys to ride your horses to church with the gas prices the way they are, but hey, we won't talk about that. But way back when, I remember I went to Walmart that day, and I'd bought the cheap version of the Mountain Dew. You know, it's like, I don't even know, Mountain Lightning, something like that. It was cheap, and it tasted good. So I had a refrigerator for our dorm room, because we could have one, so I supplied it because I wanted to be able to put my stuff in my refrigerator without feeling like I'm, you know, intruding on my, I want to say celly, because being a prison chaplain, you use that terminology, but with my roommate. And so we had three guys to one room at Central. And so it got a little crowded sometimes, and one refrigerator just didn't do it justice. But hey, at this point, we had two of us, specifically, because the other one was gone all the time. And I went out and bought Mountain Lightning, and I was, you know, had it in the fridge ready to go for the next morning. I'd walk, get ready for class, grab one of those, and I'd go. Well, I come back and I notice my roommate is drinking a Mountain Lightning. Now, at first I don't say anything, but I'm thinking, that's disrespectful, man. Like, why can't you just ask if you can have one? I'm a generous fella. If you want one, just ask me. And so I get up the next morning, I grab mine because I like to keep it cold, so I'll put a couple in there for the night to get cool so that the next morning I can grab one and head to class. And now I'm starting to well up bitterness inside of me, but because I'm a coward, I can't address the issue. And so I don't talk about it, but I'm welling up bitterness and anger towards my roommate. And I'm thinking, okay, like something little is going to create a snap within me, and this is going to be a big blowout if I don't handle the issue. So I get ready to talk about it, and I'm like, it's just not worth it. So then the next day, now I've gone all week. This is a Friday. I'm like, I'm about to throw down over the Mountain Lightning. And so I go to class, and this time I only put one in the fridge on Thursday night because I'm expecting him to steal another one. And he's stealing my cold ones, you know. And can you say cold ones in a sermon? I just realized that was a Freudian slip, guys. And so then I go, and of course I have the one in there. And then I come to fill it up, and my case is empty. And I'm like, all right, man, listen, you and I, we need to have a conversation. So I do. I confront him. I said, dude, listen, I'm a generous fella. All you have to do is ask me. I keep coming back and watching you stealing my sodas. He's like, what are you talking about? And then he pulls his case right from his closet. He goes, I bought one too. What I realized, I was actually stealing his sodas. Because he's like, you ran out a week ago. And whoops. How many of you have been there? Yeah, we've all been in moments like that where you think one thing, but the reality is something different, and where my perception was that he was taking from me, in reality, I was taking from him. And so what we're talking about today is the idea of choosing life is to simply go back to a very elementary age level where you were taught this one principle, and it's the title of the sermon today. If it's not yours, don't take it. It's as simple as that. If it is not yours, don't take it. Right? But yet we all find ways to find loopholes within the system to try to take the things that don't belong to us because we have this idea that we need this thing. And so I've come up with a few things just mentally of how you and I maybe not you and I per se, but how we steal things today. And so we're going to go over just a few of them. There may be some that pop into your head that don't pop into mine, but we'll see how well this goes. And then we're going to get into some Bible context with it. So one of the ways is just your traditional shopping, you know, your typical kleptomaniacs. Anybody in here brave enough to raise their hand? No, didn't think so. But nobody walks in and premeditates this. In fact, they did a survey, right? I should have printed this out and asked you these questions because they were quite interesting. But how many of you, I probably already gave you the answer to this one, but how many of you would believe that shoplifting is a premeditated thing or it happens on the whim? Anybody premeditated in here? You premeditate your shoplifting? Or how many of you would agree that it's probably a spur-of-the-moment thing? Some of you just don't want to participate, and that is sinful too, all right? That is sinful. And so the answer I already gave it to you a little bit ago, but it's not premeditated. Most people don't walk into a store and have a premeditated mindset that they're going to steal something. In fact, the statistic says this. People will go in and actually buy something so that they can still steal something. Isn't that incredible? I mean, you walk in and all of a sudden you're like, I want that, but I can't afford that. So I'm going to go buy a Snickers bar. I think I've told you my story of when I stole one. Right? Okay, we don't need to go there. It was by accident, and I went back and paid for it. All right? I think. But you walk into the store, and all of a sudden you go in with a game plan to what you're going to have, a shopping list, and then you look in your wallet, and you realize, I don't know if I have the money for all of these things, and then all of a sudden, you just kind of take it. And then you go buy something, so it makes you look like, well, I've been at the counter, and all this other stuff. Right now, I've been looking, because I like watching random YouTube videos. My daughter Grace got me hooked on it. And I've been watching how all of these angry adults are mad at places like Walmart because of the self-checkout. You know what I mean? They're getting mad because you have that one guy, and usually it's the oldest guy that works for Walmart, standing at the door, sir, can I check your bag? I usually respond by this, if I run away, are you going to chase me? He goes, they don't pay me enough for that, big fella. All right, I'll show you my bag. But I see so many customers that get so angry because they simply say, do you mind if I look in your bag? And I some people go in there with the idea to argue with these guys, and you're wasting 2 hours of your day to go through it. But the law actually supports that Walmart and Kmart and Target and things like that can actually ask you to check your bag. But people get offended by that. They do. They're like, are you thinking I'm a thief? Maybe you should hire more checkout clerks and you wouldn't have this problem and blah, 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 blah. You know how fast it is to just simply say, here's my receipt, check it, I'm out the door in 5 seconds. But people want to do that, and they crack me up when they do so. You know? But it's that idea because they know that people are going to try to play the system. In fact, all these years ago, back in the day in college, I knew people who worked for Walmart that went to college with me. They told me that they actually have people dressed in civilian clothing that will randomly walk the store to act like a shopper so that they can catch people like you who steal Snickers bars. I said, hey, that's a personal attack. But they do that. Stores actually have people who will play a customer and act like a customer, but what they are the eyes of the store, because sometimes you can figure out where the cameras are, but you'll never know the people that are actually working off-duty, if you will. I thought, well, that's interesting. So that's one way, your typical kleptomaniac shoplifter. Another one is the employee. If you're one of the kind of people who are paid to be at a work or a job assignment from 9 to 5, and you get a 30-minute lunch break, you take your lunch break, but then you spend an hour after your lunch break scrolling through social media, you are robbing your place of business of the time that they've been paying you to do the job that they've asked you to do. Now, I'm not going to ask how many people do that because I feel like that one will probably step on some toes. Right? No, I'm just kidding. Don't answer that question. But how many of you think that when you check personal email while you're on the job, when you check your social media accounts while you're on the job, and you're thinking, well, the time's slow, this is a slow hour, but in fact, you're robbing the company who is paying you to do a job? That's one way. Now let's go to the other side. Employers robbing the employee. If you are undercutting someone, if you aren't paying them a fair wage, if you're trying to hire people who have multiple skill sets and you're giving them an under-the-counter deal that's just not worth it, you are robbing your employees. or if you say that you're going to pay them a certain benefit and you don't follow through, or you give them a certain insurance and then you have workman's comp claims that come through and you won't follow through with that end of the deal, and you find some lawyers and all that stuff to try to weasel your way out, you are robbing the people who are working for you. Those are some ways. Another one is child with their parents. This one usually gets complicated when we talk about this one, so we'll be quick. If you are the kind of child that comes over, borrows mom and dad's car, and you don't put gas in it, whose gas was that? Remember the rule. If it's not yours, don't take it. And so if you go over and say, hey, Dad, I'm going to steal the mower for a while, and then you run that baby on empty and you put it back in the driveway, you have just robbed your parents. The problem is we've got so many parents who love you so much that they're okay with that. And they won't say anything. They just kind of let it go. But they'll tell mom about it. Can you believe Brandon took the mower and didn't put gas in here? It's 525 gallon. What is he thinking he is? You know what I mean? Those are the kind of, now you may not say that because, you know, we love Brandon. He's so cute and cuddly. But essentially, you're robbing your parents. I understand there's circumstances where you have to live at home for a little bit longer, but if you're 40 years old and you live at home with mom and dad and you don't have to pay a bill and you get to eat for free, you get to live there for free, and you offer nothing to the table, you are essentially robbing your parents. Now on the other side, children, if you grow up, and mom and dad are growing old and they didn't create a retirement plan for them, and dad is gone and passed away, and mom is needing some assistance, and you're doing everything you can, and their whole idea is that, well, I raised you, so you should take care of me for free and all this stuff, and you were just going through with your children time after time, in a way exploiting them. I know I hate using these words when we talk about this conversation, but it needs to be had. And you exploit your child to take care of you, and then you guilt trip them when they don't, you are robbing them in a way. Now, you may not agree with all of these, and I understand that. You may not. These are just things that go on in my sick, twisted mind. You know what I mean? But we offer this idea of stealing, and we don't even realize that we're doing it because of the relationships that we have, because of the culture we have. And I always hear this when I talk to people, specifically inmates, that, oh, the things that I do, that's victimless crimes. It's, I was a klepto and I did house burglary, but that's victimless. Or I stole from Walmart or JCPenney. All that's victimless crimes. But is it really? Do you think Walmart is the one actually paying for your thievery? No. You know who's paying for it? We are. The people, because what does Walmart do? Well, they say, now we got to get more security cameras. Now we have to hire so many lawyers. Now we have to put these procedures in place in order to prevent these things from happening. Now we're going to have to what? Jack up the prices so that we could cover all the extra expenses because you stole something. So it's not a victimless crime. And here's the last one that just kind of popped into my mind. And we're going to get patriotic for a second. But if you put your hand over your heart and you say the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States of America and you try to cheat on your taxes, you are a liar. That's tough. You're a liar. You're not going to pledge allegiance to the government and pledge of allegiance to the American flag and then try to rob the government of the taxes that you need to pay to help keep the roadways going, to help all these great things that are happening, whether you agree with it or not. That's a different conversation. But if you put your hand over your heart and you pledge allegiance to your country, and you try to cheat on your taxes, you're a liar. Now let's talk about the church. Malachi actually talks about how when you don't give a tithe, now when I say tithe, this could be subjective, because the New Testament doesn't talk about a 10%. It just says, be good stewards of the things that God has given you. But if you aren't tithing to a church, because here's what the tithe does. The church doesn't necessarily need your money. God doesn't need your money, but you give it because you say, I agree and I support the ministries that are taking place in the church that I serve and I worship. And if you're withholding from that, but yet you say that you agree with all the things that are doing, you're a liar. I know these are hard. This is why Rick left, I think. This is a hard one. But these are some hard points to talk about. But the thing is we aren't talking about it. And this is why I believe that this do not steal is arguably one of the most important commandments, because when Jesus starts getting this question, he had it twice in his ministry. What are the greatest commandments? One time he answered, and another time he allowed the lawyer to answer. Remember the question? What are the greatest commandments? What is the greatest commandment? And he says this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and do what? Love your neighbor as yourself. If you steal, you've broken both. You can't love your neighbor if you're robbing from them, and you can't love God if you're robbing from your neighbor. You can't sit here and say, I love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, because if you're robbing from your neighbor, you're essentially telling God, you can't provide for me. You're not offering enough for me. And if you steal from your neighbor, and you're like, hey, I love you, buddy, but I need to have that, is that loving your neighbor? Absolutely not. So what I want to do is I'm going to walk through the Ten Commandments real quickly, and I'm going to talk about how this one command affects most of these. So the first one, I am the Lord your God, we already talked about that. You're robbing God if you rob the people that he loves. First one is you shall not put, or the second one, you shall not make an idol for yourself. Do you think stealing something has become an idol for you? You see how that has just broken not only the eighth commandment, do not steal, but also the first one, and now the second one. What's the third one? You shall not take the name of the Lord of God in vain. We're going to talk about that one in a second, so put that one in your pocket. Remember the Sabbath? Stealing has nothing to do with that, right? Has nothing to do with that one. Next one, honor your father and mother. We've talked about that one and how you rob your parents. You shall not commit murder. That really has nothing to do with stealing outside of stealing the life of someone. You shall not commit adultery. Is that stealing? Absolutely. You're saying, I want what he has, and I can't have that, so I'm going to go take that. Now, she's just as guilty, but that's a form of stealing. And then we got this one, you shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. Is that a form of stealing? Sure. You're stealing the joy of someone else by using their name to defraud them, or whatever the case may be. And then the 10th commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. That whole command is seated at the root of thievery, isn't it? So do you see how if you break the 8th command, you've broken essentially 8 of the 10 commandments? Just by the one. That's how strong this is. Now if you turn over to Leviticus 19, I want to read a passage of scripture that's going to talk about this concept of loving your neighbor. Remember, the second greatest command. First one is love the Lord your God with everything. Second one is love your neighbor. Let's hear what God says you and I should do to love our neighbor. Verse 9, chapter 19 of Leviticus, starting with verse 9. It says, when you reap of the harvest of your land, you shall not reap the field right up to its edges, neither shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. And you shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the sojourner. I am the Lord your God. Pause there for a second. In this time, it was actually a biblical command, as we just read it, that you as a farmer are obligated to take care of the people around you. So what that looks like is if the sojourner, which is a traveler, would come through your area, and you had your wheat fields all the way to the edges, he says, do not harvest all the way to the edges. Leave about 5 rows so that people can walk by who are traveling, can gather from your field, and eat on their way. That's you loving your neighbor. If there is a poor person that lives in your community and the grapes fall off your vine, don't harvest those grapes. Leave those on the ground so that the poor can come and have something to eat, to eat for themselves, to fill. So you are not to harvest the grapes that fall off the vine. Do you see how much God cares about those who are less fortunate than you are? And yet in our culture today, we've lost the concept of sharing. Right? We've lost the concept of sharing. We've even lost, if I can go this far, the concept of even being neighborly. Right? So what does that look like in our culture? That may be simply inviting your neighbor over for dinner. It's as simple as that. It could just be seeing your neighbor boy that rides his bike all over the street and saying, hey, I baked a batch of cookies. Why don't you take this home to your family? Watch him ride his bike holding a plate of cookies. See, some of you, I told you, I've got a dark, twisted mind up here. But how much joy are you going to give to your neighbor when they realize they didn't have to do that, but yet they did? I wonder what that would look like. in our culture. God commands it. Leave some for the poor. Leave some for those who are less fortunate. Verse 11. You shall not steal. Here we go. You shall not deal falsely. You shall not lie to one another. You shall not swear by my name falsely and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. Verse 13. You shall not oppress your neighbor or rob him. The wages of a hired worker shall not remain with you all night until the morning. We're going to talk about that in a second. But what I find interesting is there's two verses there that talk about robbing, verse 11 and verse 13. And right there in verse 12 says something a little bit different. You shall not swear by my name falsely, so profane the name of your God. Why is that verse sandwiched between two verses that deal with stealing with one another? Do you ever ask yourself those kind of questions? That popped out. I'm reading this and I'm seeing verse 11. Okay, it's talking about stealing. We're on that topic. That's interesting. And then you read that verse and then you go to 13 where it's talking about stealing. So somewhere, somehow, using the name of God is somewhere connected to the idea of robbing your neighbor. Have you ever swore to somebody that you were going to give them what they got coming? Right? Hey man, you let me borrow that. I swear I'll give it back next week. Next week comes, you don't hear from them. So then you text them again over the weekend. Hey man, you still got that? Yeah, I know I said I'd give it to you back on Friday, but man, I swear to God I'll give it to you next week. And the next week comes, it never comes. Is that a form of stealing? I don't know. You know what I mean? Maybe, but there's a reason that that verse is sandwiched between these two. And then he goes on to this context to talk about something else where he mentions this. He says, back in that day, they were all day laborers. They didn't have salaries and careers where you show up from a 9 to 5, 5 days a week with 2 days off. They had 1 day to rest, and the rest of the time, they went and earned their keep so that their children could eat at the end of the day. That's what they did. So you would get up, you would go find work somewhere, be a day laborer, and how it worked back then is at the end of the day, the farmer, whoever you're working for, would pay you your wage so that you could go home and feed your children. So when he's saying, don't withhold of them from the next morning, which looks like this, hey man, the bank closed. I don't know what banks they had back in that day. But the bank is closed and I didn't get to it in time. I'm going to have to pay you the next morning. And what God is saying here is even if you have the money the next morning to pay him, you have still robbed his family of a meal the night before. That is stealing from your neighbor. Do you think that God takes this serious? And yet in our mind, we don't look at it that way. We look at it like all the other people who claim that this is a victimless crime. I'm not so sure. God takes this serious. There's a story from Joshua chapter 7. We've talked about it before, but the implications are still big. Let's walk through it. We're going to summarize it, and then we're going to close by talking about why this story is so impactful. So we get to this moment where Israel is this massive nation. They've just been exiled, you know, from Pharaoh in Egypt, and Moses is leading him through, but Moses can't go to the promised land through some of his own sin, his own action, and his own issues that he's dealing with God. So God says, hey, you can't go to the promised land, but we're going to hand it over to this guy Joshua, who you've been training up. He's ready to go. Let's do this. And then they go over, they're now into the promised land, and they come to their first big challenge, this city called Jericho. You ever read that story? And in Jericho, this is a massive town city that is surrounded by this wall. They know the Israelites are coming, so they put a foothold on everything. Nobody's going in, nobody's coming out. They see this massive nation getting ready to come on them, so they close down the walls, everything. The borders are shut down. And then you get the story of Rahab and how she helps the spies sneak in, get, you know, some recon mission going on. And all of a sudden, God tells them, here's what you're going to do. You're going to march around Jericho for 6 days. You're going to blow these trumpets. And then you're all going to start shouting. And on the seventh day, this baby's going to crumble. And when you go in to overtake this, you're going to take all the important things and you're going to put it towards the treasury of what God is wanting to use it for. And you will destroy everything else except for Rahab and the people within her household. Everything else is destroyed. Well, there's this guy named Achan. You guys know this story, right? Achan comes by. He's helping kind of move things along. He's going through and finding things that put towards the treasury and finding the things that are set aside for the destruction. And he's going through and he's filtering through all of the things that are within the house that he's searching for. And he comes across some gold, some silver. And all of a sudden he starts to look around. He just kind of holds it in his tunic. And he goes back to his camp and he buries it underneath the camp. Why do you think he buries it? Because he knows what he's doing is wrong. Right? Sin is always hidden, isn't it? Or at least we'd like it to be. Sin is always hidden. So I always try to tell people this. If you think that you have to hide what you're doing, chances are it's probably not a good idea. I say that with this. I say that with murder, hatred. I say that with infidelity. And as I talk to many people about these conversations all the time, if you think that you have to hide a conversation you had with another woman from your wife, it probably wasn't a good conversation. If you think that you have to hide something that you've done from the people that love you the most, your wife, your parents, your family, your children, my guess is it's probably not something worth doing. So he takes all this stuff, this silver and this gold, and he comes kind of looking around and he hides it and he's kind of just waiting for people to pass by so he can get to his tent so he can bury it underneath, and all of a sudden he gets it covered. Nobody has a clue what's happening, so he thinks. But guess who saw everything? God. We forget that God is all-knowing, God is all-loving, God is omnipresent, which means he sees everything. And what you and I could hide from each other, you can't hide from God. That's dangerous for us. So what does God do? Well, he tells Joshua, we're not moving forward. Joshua's like, what are you talking about? Because they do. They leave and they go to this little town of Ai, or Ai, however you say it in the Hebrew language. And they go and they get decimated by a town of 300 people. That's it. And this nation comes back in retreat to Joshua and they're like, what in the world happened? And so Joshua goes and pleads before the Lord and says, Lord, what's happening? And he says, my plan is halted because someone broke the rule. Someone stole. And of course, Joshua is like me, where, okay, Lord, give us the answer. He's like, no, you're going to have to figure this out for yourself. So then he goes and they cast lots and the lots fall on this guy named Achan. And so Joshua, in his loving attitude, goes to Achan and says, what have you done to Israel, you fool? That's how I picture it. It's probably a lot more gentle than that. But he walks to Achan and he says, what did you do? Of course, Achan, full of guilt, which is also another thing we've got to recall, everything that remains hidden is also full of guilt and shame. Do you ever recognize that about the sin in your life? Everything that you think is worth hiding, when it's exposed, always brings guilt and shame. Always. But notice what happens when you're done being exposed. You feel like the weight of the world has been lifted off your shoulders. So as Joshua begins to come clean with his story, with what's happening, Israel says, now you have to die. Kids are gone, right? We could talk about the rated R version of this story. Not just him, but his whole family. People from Israel died going to Ai, to Ai, for this battle because of one man's sin. Do you think that God takes this serious? I know he does. I know he does. My question for you, as we kind of wrap this whole thing up, is to what are the ways that you are stealing from the people around you? What are the ways that you've been so immune or numb to the concept of thievery within your life? I know we live in a culture now where a lot of the theft is happening in online forums. It's not so much walking into a store stealing something, it's someone stealing your identity and stealing your kids' identity and taking massive amounts of money out on credit cards, and that's the culture that we live in right now. But what are the ways that you are robbing God and your neighbor today? I want you to think about that. What are ways that you are robbing God, and in what ways are you robbing each other? Because when you break that eighth commandment, you are breaking eight of the Ten Commandments in just that one moment. God takes this seriously. And if you and I just have the mindset of choosing life, and simply going back to that elementary rule, which is, if it's not yours, don't take it. Life is so much better. And Paul mentions this in Philippians 4, where he says, the reason I can trust God to provide, because God can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, it's not that he expects to be an NBA star. It's not that Paul expects to have many wealth and all these riches. But Paul says the secret of understanding all this is to live in this concept of contentment. And when you and I are content with what the Lord has provided for you, not only are you enjoying the gifts that God has given you, but you're enjoying the people that you get to enjoy the gift with. And jealousy doesn't become a thing, but celebration does. Do you notice? That is the opposite of envy. As envy falls, celebration comes up. So when someone gets promoted, rather than being bitter and broken, you celebrate that. Hey man, high five, congratulations. When an alcoholic gets to recovery, you don't sit there and say, oh, they don't deserve it. You celebrate them. Right? Because the opposite of envy is celebration. If we simply choose to live life this way and not take what's not ours, you'll start to learn this concept of contentment to where now you get to celebrate life with one another. Let's pray. Father, we're grateful for the opportunity that we have to just come and dive into these Ten Commandments. And as we've been walking week by week, unfolding these things, we've come into to this one about stealing. And Lord, it may not mean as much to us as we think, but it means a lot to you. And so, Lord, I pray that if our hearts need to be humbled, that you bring that up in our life. If there are things that we have wronged people, especially you, I pray that you bring it on our hearts so that we can try to make it right. And although we may never remember everything that we've stolen from someone around us, Lord, I pray for your forgiveness. And we thank you for Jesus, who's already come and given his life so that we can be free. Not to limit our life, Lord, but so that we can simply enjoy it. So I pray, Lord, as we walk out these doors, we don't worry about what we can take from somebody else, but we start to focus on what we can give to somebody else, that we can be content on the things that we have. Thank you for Jesus and what he's come to do. It's in his name we pray. Amen.